Much Scrolling for March 14th, 2023. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Lucky the Leprechaun, Steve.
Just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. I be gora, Chip. It's time for St. Patrick's Day. That is my vampire leprechaun voice. Thank you.
Pink hearts, orange stars, yellow moons, Steve. Green clovers.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of our friends who celebrate and apparently celebrated over the weekend. It was apparently St. Patrick's Day weekend here in Chicago.
And it's St. Patrick's Day Friday, Steve.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Well, you know, they can keep your hands off our lucky charms.
I find it odd that they would celebrate on the weekend before St. Patrick's Day when St. Patrick's Day is on a Friday. Seems like you would go with Friday, Saturday on the 17th and 18th. But maybe they're planning to come to my musical. That's why.
That could be true there, Steve. They could be going to see the musical.
Where the Banshees are of Inisherin.
I think they're going to go see the SpongeBob SquarePants show.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. I actually sat down for a few moments this week. As I said, it is musical season. My musical opens on Thursday. Yes, we are doing SpongeBob the Musical. And I actually had a moment to sit down this week and I watched Chris Rock Selective Outrage. This is Chris Rock's live stand-up performance coming from Baltimore, Maryland, live on Netflix. Netflix's first ever live event.
Isn't that interesting? Do you think this was a test to see if they'll take on sporting events?
I believe that live entertainment is something that Netflix has wanted to get into for a while. I think that we are going to see a change in how live entertainment is broadcast and Netflix wants in.
What is interesting about this is, will they take this live performance and then edit it?
They did.
They already edited it.
They did, because there's at least one moment in this stand-up special where Chris Rock made a mistake and he messed up a joke and he said out loud in the live event, "I messed up this joke." He used a different word. And then
he used a different word. I don't even understand that. What type of words would he use, Steve? No, I'm teasing.
He's good at words. He's a wordsmith. Chris Rock is definitely a storyteller. He is definitely the stand-up comedian that is able to tell a story, to give us a narrative. And yes, he messed up this joke and it ruined the whole joke. And unfortunately, it was one of the last jokes in the show. So it's one of the things that I remember the most about this performance, because mm-hmm. It came last. But he noted that he messed it up and then he tried it again, because that's what you do when you do live performance. That's where Netflix is going to have to figure out what they want from this. Yes, they can edit it later. Yes, they can package it later and put it out there later. But that mistake is still out there in the public.
Well, that's interesting. Now, of course, the reason why this was so noteworthy was not just because Chris Rock was making this performance live. It was also because of the controversy concerning Will Smith and what happened when he hosted the award show about a year ago.
Yeah, the Oscars from last year. Chris Rock had a really bad year after Will Smith decided to run on emotion and charge the stage and slapped Chris Rock live on the stage at the Oscars last year.
So after COVID punched you in the gut a few years, Chris got, slap in the face.
Mm-hmm. Chris Rock certainly had a bad year as a result of that action. He really needed to voice who he was as a result of that moment. The moment is emblematic of the times. Can comedians make jokes? Can comedians make fun of situations? And
let me back you up real quick, because I'm going to challenge you a little bit with that. Chris Rock has been very restrained on commenting on this, on making any comments other than, it happened. But he certainly withheld what could have been, something that was very explosive. While it was explosive in the media, it wasn't explosive with him.
Until this particular stand-up special where he came out and tried to defend his opinion of what happened and the hurt feelings that happened between Will Smith and his wife and Chris Rock. And I don't know that he was successful in his defense.
Really? Because one of the things that I saw, I didn't watch the special was, but I did see that he said, because I was a Will Smith fan.
Mm-hmm. As was I. I was a huge Will Smith fan. I own every Will Smith album. I enjoy Will Smith's rap career. I enjoy his acting career. Independence Day is a great film. Fun, silly, wild sci-fi. And my opinion of Will Smith after this moment, this emotional reaction moment, my opinion of him has changed.
Really? Yeah. I think that this was certainly a moment of lapsed reason. Certainly, if Will could go back in time and prevent himself from doing this, he would do that.
That'd be a good sci-fi movie.
I think that he recognizes that this was not a proper response.
Agreed.
And we've got to, in society, figure out a way to move beyond this, because you've seen people melt down in stores. You've seen bad things happen with good people doing those.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a book that eventually we'll cover here that actually talks a little bit about this. How do you recover professionally? Mm-hmm. Now, some things are more difficult to recover from. I mean, certainly punching somebody in the face at an award show on live TV is one of those. Think about what Mel Gibson is also going through, mm-hmm. because of, you know, bad actions certainly can taint you.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is most people who, I don't know, I'm thinking of that, who was it? He was maybe a CFO from a company who like dressed down a Chick-fil-A worker by getting a large water and just railed against this rank and file teenager.
Hmm.
And he was fired,
mm-hmm.
From this. You know, do those people get forgiven?
Right.
You know, certainly that is a bad action,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's, you know, how do we move forward from that? We, you know, here's a good one going on this week. Rick Pitino is a basketball coach. He's probably the best basketball coach, if not one of the top two or three best basketball coaches in the nation. He was fired for some indiscretions that, while he certainly is no angel, did not turn out to be true. He was exonerated from that. He's been coaching at a little school. He's going to be hired most likely by a Catholic school. And one of the arguments the Catholic University will say is that you can ask for forgiveness.
That there's a lot of conversation that comes up from this comedy special beyond that conversation, because Chris Rock leaves that conversation to the end of this. Beyond that, the comedy of this is pretty well put together in 2023. Selective Outrage is the title, and Chris Rock's thesis here is that there's people who are upset about certain things and not upset about other things. And the idea of finding your outrage and being outraged about something and protesting the idea of something is very much the zeitgeist of 2023.
How interesting, because we want to remember Selective Outrage, mm-hmm. as we move to our next movie.
It's kind of the theme of the episode today, isn't it, Chip? You saw Walt's Disenchanted Kingdom. Tell us all about this movie.
All right, so this movie was released in January, and it is certainly propaganda. It is a documentary. It is funded by the Catholic League, which, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the Catholic League, Steve. Steve, tell me about the movie Dogma.
Yeah, the Catholic League was the main protester of the movie Dogma, Kevin Smith's movie about Catholicism, about faith, about religion, and they were out front in the theater protesting this movie, having never seen it, just seeing the original script. Kevin Smith, being the intelligent person that he is, and the good Catholic that he is, he infiltrated the protest out front and was interviewed on television saying how much he didn't like this movie Dogma and how it's against everything he believes.
How lovely is that? Was he having a Duncan, Steve? Was he having a Duncan with his friend Ben?
Quite possibly, yes. The Catholic League really is out there trying to keep their faith, their thought, their idea of Catholicism as something important to them and trying to keep defamation and discrimination away from, you know, all sorts of media.
Well, certainly the statement I outlined was defend the rights of Catholics. Mm-hmm. So certainly Catholicism has a way of looking at the world through their faith. Mm-hmm. And they want to defend that. And they put out a piece very critical of Walt Disney and many of the actions that they have made over the last few years, from choices they've made on character design and actions within that. So it usually has to do with sexuality, where a character announces their sexuality as part of their character, which they feel strongly and rightly so for their belief. You can understand this more of the nuclear family type thing, mom and dad, children, you know, type thing. But certainly, you know, we have a lot of variety of people today. The other part they're talking about is how Disney has got involved in politics, mm-hmm. and particularly the situation that went on down in Florida. And I think I understand DeSanto's argument better. Maybe I understood it at one time and it kind of gets muddled. But DeSantis, the Florida governor, and DeSantis's argument is, how can a company who is based in California want to influence the politics of Florida? And I think that DeSantis really put a pin on what the challenge is. Listen, if you're a person who has strong beliefs that Disney is doing the right thing, you're not going to enjoy this film. If you're a person who wants to be very critical of Walt Disney and sort of their impact on media and what you feel their values are as a company, other than, you know, they've got one color that they like, and that's color green, Steve. Just remember that. They don't care who it comes from. But the reality is they talk a little bit about, they're being very critical about the activist position of the company, the sexual ideological parts that are being brought into their movies and cartoons and things of that nature. I did not particularly enjoy this film. I didn't particularly think it was the strongest of arguments mm-hmm. against that. I do think that they, you know, touch the tender flesh a little bit, because you can understand where people can get a little sensitive mm-hmm. to, you know, some of the things that, you know, in your mind, you think this is what the company stands for. And you also can misinterpret what they're really trying to stand for. Mm-hmm. The reality is this, Walt Disney and Walt Disney's products, they want to be open to everybody. They want everybody to come in and enjoy their products. The question of whether some of their strategies are creating a disincentive for a certain group, well, that's out there. Mm-hmm. The Catholic League certainly feels that there's a problem with that, and they're willing to put together a movie outlining their positions.
Okay. So you've started with, this is propaganda. This is a one-sided argument. Is there any attempt at giving equal time in this?
This is produced by the Catholic League, Steve.
So no.
It's their arguments.
Okay, got it. All right. You also got a chance. It's just Dogma Day around here. You also got a chance to see a musical in our Adventures in a Black Box. You went to see Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill, the musical, God herself in the musical about Alanis Morissette.
Now, this is a jukebox style musical, Steve. And for those of you who don't know what that means the music of Jagged Little Pill and a few other recordings by Alanis Morissette help outline. They basically are part of telling a story. This story that we get told is by Diablo Cody, based on her works. And Steve, you know, where is she from?
She is from Lamont, Illinois, my friend. She is one of those filmmakers and writers that you know, those of you who've seen the movie Juno or the movie Tully or the TV show The United States of Tara. She is one of my favorite writers.
She's from the Chicago area, Steve.
She doesn't talk like that. Nobody does.
She doesn't? She's not from the South Side?
No, Lamont is definitely not the South Side.
Anyway, this is a serviceable musical, in my opinion. 50 out of 100 if you need an idea of what I felt of this story. This is a story that I would say is kind of pre-COVID. This is based in Connecticut. We've got the nuclear family. Let's say nuclear family. We have mom and dad. Dad works really hard. He works 60 hours a week. Mom is addicted to prescription pills to make some questionable choices when she can't get her prescription pills. The son, you know, is superstar son. He's going to Harvard, Steve. Mm-hmm. And the daughter is adopted black child who is, she thinks she's gay, but she meets a boy. And the girlfriend is upset. And everybody at the end turns out to be, you know, super happy. What Good. Can I say? We all grow during this time.
Well, you ought to know.
You ought to know. So it talks a little bit about the anxieties of, I don't know, any neighborhood. My goodness, I lived in a neighborhood and, you know, what families trying to compete with other families. This idea that we're not all blessed is really kind of crazy. You know, once again, the situation is they have it pretty good. They have a good life. It looks like a model life. But what we find out is because dad's working so hard and mom's running what everybody thinks is this perfect household, there's cracks in that. And what are the cracks that we find? Well, the graduating senior who's going off to Harvard goes to a party. There's a rape scene in the middle of this musical. And that's very difficult. The question is the mom goes, oh no, if you go to the police and tell someone about it, you could lose your ability to go into Harvard. I don't know how that works, but let's assume that it's true. He had nothing to do with that rape other than he was at the party where it happened. And he had to make some decisions there. The family adopting a black child, they're a white family. They're not recognizing that the daughter may have some roots that she needs to explore. And they're kind of not really understanding that. She's the girlfriend is jealous because now the daughter has a boyfriend. There's just a lot of stuff like that. Okay. The best scene of this musical was where the mother dances with herself. There's a person who is on a couch, dressed the same as the mom. They kind of mirror each other and they do this kind of dance. And eventually there's a third mom, same person, showing up. And there's this sort of dancing around some challenges. Now, I would say this is a serviceable musical in the sense you're going to a musical and you're enjoying it.
Okay.
Let me be very blunt about this. I've never been in a musical where the people in the audience have stood up and started cheering with the stage musical. And I'm talking about clapping and cheering on the dance production. It was interesting. There's a live band there playing. But when the song You Ought to Know gets played,
cut it out.
It's amazing. I mean, I just looked over. There may be 25 people out there standing up, clapping along with the messaging because you got a story that's going on as the cast is singing this. And there's another scene where there's going to be a protest going on because of the rape scene and it's being covered up and how they want to work with this young lady to, I don't know, re-put together her life. and the everybody's holding up a sign about this, and they're looking at the audience, and there's like kind of with disdain, and there's, you know, just a lot of whoops and hollers and claps and standing up and cheering this idea of silence being a situation that they feel is being tolerated. I thought this was okay. The people I was with, really, they love this musical.
Okay.
I don't know what I missed. I mean, I thought it was okay. I didn't really think it was special. And I think it has to do with, it's very, you know, when you do a musical, your story's got to be very blunt. There's no nuance in a musical. Correct. It's like,
this, you know, is happening right now. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that part of it had a lot to do with it. I think that the music of Jagged Little Pill has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's modern dancing and, you know, stuff like that has a lot to do with it. It's okay. A lot of people said this is really, really good.
It won the Tony Award for Best Book. Diablo Cody's Words won the Tony Award in 2020. So a lot of people really enjoyed this one, Chip.
Okay.
There you go. There is Chip's review of Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. Okay.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. Chip, have I mentioned that I like science fiction novels in the last 8.5 years?
Steve, especially if there's time travel. But you know what you really, really love, Steve?
Uh-huh.
The Babaverse.
You know what I really love, Chip, is the writing of Dennis E. Taylor. He has a style of being able to take the zeitgeist of the nerd who loves The Simpsons and Star Trek and Star Wars and sneak in these little references in a way that a certain 40-something-year-old podcaster enjoys to no end. Yes, you're right. The Babaverse series by Dennis E. Taylor is on my list of my favorite books of all time. I read a book this week that is not in the Babaverse. This is in a different, completely different storytelling mode. This is the sequel to Outland that Dennis E. Taylor published in 2015. This one is called Earthside, and it has all of those tropes that I love from the Babaverse series. This one is about a group of, well, nerds who discover a portal to an alternative Earth. And at right about the same time that they discover this portal to an alternative Earth, Yellowstone.
Is there cheap hamburger?
That is a totally different, that's an alternative history. This is not an alternative history. This one is a different world completely, completely different universe, multiverse, all of that. At that same time, Yellowstone has a super volcano eruption that is a planet killer. The sky is filled with ash and we go into nuclear winter and the Earth is uninhabitable. It just so happens that these people find this portal to another world and they rescue as many people as they can to this alternative world. This second book, Earthside, continues that adventure where these ragtag group of people that they just happen to collect that were just local enough to shove through this portal, they have to find out, you know, how to survive in this situation on a different planet with very limited resources. The good news is that they can go back to Earth and scavenge what they can because there's very few people left on original Earth. They get what they need and they go back to this beautiful, lush, green world with lots of big animals that are curious.
Steve, this seems like a pretty interesting premise.
I love it.
The idea that you have this virgin planet but you can go back and pick up what you need from the previous planet.
It is a very well put together scenario. There's so much to the interaction between these people. There's so many different groups of people that are involved. There's military people and police and students. These are mostly 20 something students who are in charge of this because it was their project. And
are they blue cat people?
They're not blue cat people. And the older groups that join in the second book, Earthside, they have a different perspective on how things should be done. And in this second book, they decide that
Are they a large voting bloc?
Aha! We get one of the themes of the story, Chip. They wind up having a constitutional convention to decide how governance is going to work in this new world. And yes, the older, wiser people seem to have a large voting block and a lot of different ideas. The younger, less mature, but at the same time, maybe much more intelligent group because of who they are and what they've been studying this whole time, they have a very different idea of how this constitutional convention should go.
Does Gen X just say, just mellow out and let's not get too riled up about anything?
100%. 100%. Dennis E. Taylor is definitely a Gen X writer. And 100%, he is the one standing in the middle of this conversation between the millennials and the baby boomers. That is absolutely a theme of this story.
Steve, we don't have to label.
Yeah, we don't have to label because we're standing in the middle of the baby boomers and the millennials. Yes, I love this writing. Dennis E. Taylor gets me. He is writing these books for me. These books are directed exactly at the pop culture loving 40-something Gen X person who I am. I don't know who else would love these books as much as I do. I remember when we read the Bobaverse, you enjoyed it. You enjoyed the Bobaverse.
Yeah, it's fine. It was fine.
Yeah.
In fact, did they come to a conclusion here? Was there a solution to this?
To the
other than this mellow group that's sort of in between that gets pulled and tugged both ways, probably should just, you know, make it happen.
No, the Gen X are not the hero of the story. I'm sorry to tell you.
What type of story is this, Steve?
Throw it away. Throw the book out.
You know what John Hughes would do, Steve? John Hughes would have them all in like some kind of classroom and probably staying Saturday or something like that and probably talking it out
a little bit
and recognizing that aren't we all the same in some ways?
Absolutely. Yes, I would love to see that scene on Earthside for sure.
When does Ducky arrive and they play like the pop song, Steve?
I love this book. I love this storytelling. The Bobaverse. Okay, here's the one thing I didn't love about this book. The whole time I was hearing the Bobaverse and longing for the storytelling of that story. Mainly, it's because the same audiobook reader is presenting this in audiobook form. Ray Porter, I tell you what, with an exclamation point at the end, Ray Porter is the best audiobook reader on the planet. I love the sound of his voice. I love how he can give me different voices for different characters, and I can recognize those characters in audio form. This is book two of this series. It absolutely is set up for a book three or further. I am ready, willing, and able to wait for Dennis E. Taylor to give us a third book in this series. It's a fun adventure, enough science, enough fiction, and enough comedy to really keep me riveted to this story.
And Gen X just looks horrified and recognizes that this nightmare may never end.
It's never going to end. We're stuck in the middle. They forgot our 16th birthday.
That's right. We're angry about it, Steve.
Still.
But you know what? Jake arrives at the end, Steve. That's all going to be well.
That's all fine. That's Earthside by Dennis E. Taylor.
appetite.
Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week.
We have apps, Steve.
We have apps. We have the apps. Week now. Remember that from 8 years ago?
I do.
Our appetite. What you been working on with apps, Chip?
Steve, after watching a lot of YouTube videos, I don't know if you've ever seen a YouTube video, but there happens to be a few commercials that get played like lots and lots and lots of times.
Every time I try to use YouTube in class, I get infuriated by the amount of commercials that are now on YouTube.
And for $120, you can get rid of them for the year. No, I mean, thank you. Jeepers creepers, man.
No, thank you.
So anyway, there are alternatives to doing this. And many of these videos will have an offer at the end that if you get CuriosityStream, you also can get Nebula.
Okay.
And at no extra cost, and a few other type things. So I did. I went and got CuriosityStream, which is an app. And you can watch it on your phone. You can watch it on your tablet. You can watch it on your media player. For me, it's an Apple TV. And CuriosityStream is all about documentaries. Mm-hmm. And I've watched a couple of documentaries. Sometimes they're very good. You know, they're 4K and they have a great sound and stuff like that. Sometimes they look like they're like senior thesis. You know, the fonts are not right. They're just, you know, they're beginning people that are putting together stuff that eventually they'll be really tight and, you know, they'll have something on History Channel or something. The subjects are pretty awesome. You know, they have science and technology and they have history. They have ancient history and what if you lived on Mars and let's go look at some, you know, some fancy nature type stuff. There's a large catalog of material to choose from. You know, I don't know if it's a multiple year type of subscription, but I picked it up for the year. The founder of it was one of the founders of the Discovery Channel.
Okay.
So, you know, we've got some money. He obviously determined that there should be a market beyond what this Discovery Channel would have. And this is it.
So this is kind of, in my head, a alternative to PBS instead of an alternative to YouTube.
This is just one of those services out there that you just don't really always hear about.
Mm-hmm.
Or you haven't tried out. And I think we're at a period of time where we can try out different apps, see what they have to offer at the time. Certainly there's going to be a lot of flux with the Netflix and the HBOs and you know, the Paramounts and stuff like that. They're being lost because there's so many of them and nobody really connects. I mean, Paramount has become just the Star Trek app.
Yeah. Yes, it has.
Disney has become either, you know, the MCU app or the you know, it could be any number of things.
But Muppets.
The Muppets. Regardless, that's one of the real challenges of what these apps have become is they're going to be dominated by some mega property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm beyond some of these properties. I'm ready to explore some stuff else out there.
And that's what we wanted from the a la carte system was you get to pick and choose. And if you choose CuriosityStream for documentaries, maybe you sit there for a month. Maybe you pay for a month of that. And then maybe you move on. Maybe you've gotten your fill of that dish and you move on to something else. Mm-hmm. So I'm a PBS kid. I never had cable growing up. I still don't have cable to this day. PBS is my source for documentary information like this.
Well, Netflix has documentaries.
It does. Yes, that is true.
Amazon Prime has documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that is hopefully deeper and also organized better to be able to focus on something.
Okay. I prefer the polished PBS style of documentary to this. This one certainly undercuts the price of the PBS passport. That's $5 a month. CuriosityStream is $3 a month. You can pay for a full year for $20. That seems reasonable.
Well, they do have some very polished stuff here.
Okay.
They also have some stuff that's, you know, not as polished.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, what would you say is Amazon Prime? Same thing.
Yeah. All of the services are certainly trying to find the media. This is very much like the early days of cable, the early days of MTV, where you can find something to watch, but is that something valuable? I think that's where we're at with all these streaming services.
Well, you're just waiting for that day that they'll have the streaming service that'll be just Pauly Shore and Jerry Springer, Steve.
I'm sure I can find a Pauly Shore streaming service right now. The Weasel.
It'll be, in the morning, it'll be Pauly Shore. In the afternoon, it's going to be Jerry Springer. And at night, it's Judge Judy. And I think, you know, you'll have the greatest time.
Oh, boy. Your brain just melts right out of your nose.
And, you know, over midnight, it'll be the Tiger King.
I am not subscribing to your streaming service, sir.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's plenty of things happening in the world this week. Let's talk about almost none of them. Hey, Chip, basketball.
It's my favorite sport. I love to see him run up and down the court.
I thought soccer was your favorite sport.
Steve, I am from the South, my friend. We watch college basketball here. Basketball, Steve.
Okay. Tell us all about March Madness in basketball.
Steve, after watching all the conference tournaments and having everyone punch their ticket to the dance, they announced what the brackets would be. And the 68 best teams are going to compete for the national championship. We get the first four, and that'll be on True TV, and you can watch the first two games. And those two will compete on Thursday, along with a whole bunch of teams. And the first round starts at 12:15, so about noon, and will go probably till midnight as far as the first day of games. And then on Friday, there's also the first day of games, and they'll do the same thing. Start about noon, and they'll go till about midnight. And the winners move forward. They move. The Thursday winners will play Saturday. The Friday winners will play on Sunday. And then they'll move to the following week. And within 3 weeks, Steve, we'll have a national champion. And this is a beautiful, beautiful, it's probably the best tournament in the United States. It's kind of like the World Cup. But for the United States, it's basketball. And the beautiful part about it is you don't have to know anything about these teams. Just find the lower seeded team. If they start pulling those upsets, they're called Cinderellas, and you cheer them on. And that's the beautiful part about seeing these games is you get to see the Cinderella stories kind of play out, and the best teams eventually arise, and they'll be a champion.
I do love the story of these young people succeeding and being successful in what they're doing and putting their heart and soul into it. I do enjoy that. I don't enjoy the drama of the winners and losers and the agony of defeat part of sports.
Well, there's always winners and losers in sports, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
That's just part of what the game is.
Yep.
And eventually they start seeing one shining moment. While we're talking about sports, one of the things that we've talked about is streaming services, mm-hmm. and sort of how they are impacting and how we'll eventually have some losers in this. And we're starting to see it in those regional sports networks. And what happened when Disney ended up buying Fox is Fox had to unload those regional sports networks. Those regional sports networks would usually play Major League Baseball or NHL, or they'd play, you know, a lot of college ball or something like that. And they were usually covering your local area. Well, two of them are getting ready to go down, Steve, go down in flames. So Fox's regional sports networks became Bally Sports. So if you have that app and you're watching your local team, the Carolina Hurricanes play through the Bally app. Well, they're expected to file bankruptcy in the next week or so. They just don't have enough money to work. They've negotiated whatever the fees are to be able to carry these services. So this is something that's kind of falling apart. This is the washout. We'll eventually see it with the entertainment apps too. Hmm. But right now, these are the sports ones that are going to go down. And AT&T Sports Network, which is part of Warner Brothers and Discovery. If you've been following the cutbacks that they've been doing with their services, HBO Max, then you're starting to see a little bit of this. They also have Major League Baseball, NBA, National Hockey League, and stuff like that. They recently informed the clubs that they've been sponsoring that they may not have the money to pay for those games. And in fact, it's even worse than that. They don't have the money to do it, but if they don't reach a deal with them to continue, as in lower your fees or take over the production and broadcast, that they may have to liquidate. So imagine you're a baseball team, and this is part of your outreach to the public. You know, I want to follow the Baltimore Orioles. I want to follow the Kansas City Royals or something like that. And you've just been told, hey, listen, season's getting ready to start. We don't have enough money. You take over this and make it, you know, make it work. Well, it just seems like it's going to be, you know, pretty challenging. Mm-hmm. So this is something to continue to watch. We are eventually going to see it in, you know, Peacock or Paramount or Netflix. We're going to start seeing this in entertainment. Mm-hmm. But sports is where we're first seeing this.
And that might be one of the reasons why Netflix gave us that live stand-up comedy special, is thinking about live entertainment and how that money of live entertainment might be shifting once again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Steve, it's a good time to remind people to watch out for your friends. Don't turn your back on them.
Yeah, happy Ides of March tomorrow. Beware the Ides of March, kids. Yes, don't turn your back on your friends. Make sure you're keeping everybody happy tomorrow.
Exactly. If you've got a friend named Brutus, yeah, just keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on him.
There's a dog named Brutus in our neighborhood. It makes me laugh every time. I said, "Et tu, Brute?"
Steve, on Friday, while you're watching the basketball games dressed as a leprechaun, you're going to be at the musical, right?
I will be watching that basketball game very carefully while I'm producing SpongeBob the Musical on stage on Friday. So yes, happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody who's celebrating. Come on out to a musical.
Dress as a leprechaun. They'll love you.
Yes. Spring begins on Monday. Spring. Ah, finally, the snows are going to recede beginning Monday, March 20th. Happy spring to everybody that celebrates.
Well, maybe not in the Midwest, but I'll tell you where it does get warm, and that's going to be in the South.
In the South.
Steve. Yeah. And all we're praying for is a few frozen days to kill some bugs, because it's going to be a buggy summer.
That's the bug forecast for March 14th, 2023.
So what do we have? We have the Ides of March, we got St. Patrick's Day, and we have spring beginning. It's a busy, busy week, Steve. We hope everybody has a good time.
It is definitely a busy week for me, my friend. Production is wrapping up on this musical. We open on Thursday, we close on Saturday, and then I will collapse by the time next Tuesday rolls around for our next episode of Too Much Scrolling. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're still on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Lucky the Leprechaun.
We'll see you in the future.
Et tu, Brute?
Et tu, Brute?